Hey, while we might not be as fast as those guys racing in the Tour de France, cyclists like you and me are always trying to boost our performance and aid our recovery, and that's where today's sponsor, MitoQ, comes in. Like everything else in our bodies, our mitochondria become less efficient as we age. From the age of 30 on, levels of CoQ10 in the mitochondria can decline by 10% with each passing decade. This means that our body's natural resilience also declines, which can impact our training, our recovery, immunity, digestion, sleep, stress, hormones, and even brain power. And this is why a new supplement called MitoQ is becoming so popular with endurance athletes. It helps the body better deal with intense training periods and then recover faster. Some athletes have even said they've improved their VO2 max, heart rate variability, and lactate thresholds when you combine that with not needing as long to recover and being able to maintain more intense training cycles. You can see why MitoQ might help you achieve your performance gains. To learn more about the unique formula of MitoQ, to read some independent clinical trials, and read some independent athlete testimonials, go to MitoQ.com/powerupcycling. That's www.MitoQ.com/powerupcycling. Thanks to MitoQ for sponsoring this episode of the Velo News Podcast. Let's get on with the show. Welcome back to the Velo News Podcast. Fred Dreyer coming to you from a sunny, warm, beautiful, beautiful day here at the Velo News home away from home offices outside Boulder, Colorado. The sun is shining. All that snow from the other day has melted, and it's just very pleasant outside. But I wouldn't know anything about that. I'm not going outside these days. I am dedicated to Tour de France coverage, and that means podcasting, writing stories, watching the race, just 24/7, neglecting my family, neglecting my health, not going outside. But I do it for you, you passionate listeners, because it's the Tour de France. No, I am getting outside. I ride my bike very early, but yeah, it's the Tour. There's just so much to talk about, and there's so much to talk about today, because today, Sunday, we just watched stage 15 of the Tour, which finished up the Grand Colombia in the Jura Mountains. Huge battle. And the big storyline, Egan Bernal fell out of contention. He lost like 7:22. Primoz Roglic continues to steamroll. And we're going to talk all about that today on the podcast. Second half of the show, we have a great chat with James Start and Andrew Hood, who were they were at the summit taking photos, talking to riders. They have some good insight of what may have gone wrong with Team Ineos and Egan Bernal on that climb. We also have a dispatch. We have a little catch-up with Toms Skoinch, breakaway artist. Fan favorite, that Toms. We love Toms. He's been FOVN, friend of Velo News, for many, many years now, and he is talking about taking us inside this Tour with what it's like to be in the peloton, recovering from crashes, and just what it's like to be on these climbs without any fans. It's kind of a bizarre and surreal way to race a bike with no fans. But before we get to that, we have Jens coming to us from Germany. Jens, you've had a very packed day of watching this race unfold as well. So we see this big battle on the Grand Colombier. We see Egan Bernal and Team Ineos. You know, this is one of those climbs where I think some people were hoping and praying that, you know, he was going to defy the odds and throw off his cape and emerge as Superman and drop everyone. And that just didn't happen, because he got dropped 13Ks to go and just did not have it. And I mean, Jens, when you look at Ineos and Bernal getting dropped that early in the race and all the storylines about it, I mean, is this Tour GC run officially over for Egan Bernal?
Well, of course it is. With 7 minutes, there's no way in hell that you ever, ever going to reach the podium. Or you would need a massive crash of like about 30 riders in front of you. So, no. But he's a champion. The team knows how to win, and they want to win. So they will use the rest day tomorrow that actually just came in handy for them. They're going to use that rest day to reassess the situation, to lick their wounds and make a new plan. Of course, they are out of teams competition. They are out of the individual competition, but they still a bunch of good riders, or actually great riders. So they might be coming back and gunning for stage wins. I'm sure a team like Ineos does not want to leave the Tour de France without anything, right? So they might just take it easy on the rest day. Who knows? Maybe take it easy on the next day as well. Take 2 days off, get the head straight again, and they go, now we go for stage wins left, right, and in the middle. So I wouldn't be surprised if they would, yeah, still show their jersey, still show their colors. But for the overall, for the podium, it is definitely over.
You know, Jens, you've been part of some great teams over the years. What's it like when you're on a team and the GC guy just has a really bad day and his shot at the overall goes out the window? What's it like on the team bus immediately afterwards? Take me through the social dynamic on a team when your best guy just has a really, really bad day.
Well, this year it's a little special for Team Ineos because none of them is any better. So it's not that you would have two guys to go, I could have won this stage. I could have been top three if I wouldn't have to work for Bernal. No, after all, Bernal is still their best choice. So maybe part of the reason why he is not as good is because the team also is not as good. They couldn't protect him in a way they should. They couldn't support him in the high mountains in a way they should. So it's a team failure. It's a team failure. And we do have to look much further down the road than the last 2 days or the last 2 weeks. The mistakes has been done in 2 months ago, 3 months ago. You know, maybe they didn't manage, no, not maybe, for sure, they didn't manage the corona lockdown well enough with Egan Bernal back home in Colombia. Maybe there was a lack of communication. Maybe the coach couldn't see him and say, hey, look, let me look at you. How do you look on a bike? You know, the athlete, he's young. He goes, yes, sir, I felt good. Yes, sir, I felt good. Maybe he didn't, but he's only 23 years old. Maybe he didn't dare to say, hey, look, I'm completely naked. I need a day off, right? And that's where it went downhill. Because if he's with the team and the coach can actually look at him, at his body language, the coach might go, hey, Egan, you look tired. You need a day off. So problem already starts 2 or 3 months ago as well when they're basically the mastermind behind the success. Nicolas Portal, he surprisingly and sadly passed away earlier this year. They did not replace him with a capable and qualified person for the job. Instead, they decided to cut his job in 3 or 4 little pieces and relegate it to the team they already had in place. So Egan Bernal, the head is missing instead of giving it all to the lieutenants. How much worse is the army without a general and maybe 10 lieutenants? It needs a general to take a decision. We do this right now. We do this tomorrow. The next week, we're going to fly to the training camp. And they missed that person who called the shots. And the plan looked good at the start to give more responsibility to each one of the sport directors, performance directors, and whatever they have. But in reality now, it turns out, no, it wasn't as good as it looked at the start. You need one person able to make the calls and have a plan, a master plan in his head, a plan who is in 5 different heads, probably doesn't come together. So lesson learned, they will not do that again. They will come back next year again and actually really going for the win, but not this year. And they will for sure analyze the mistakes, but yeah, they have to look down 2 or 3 months down the road where it went wrong in the beginning.
Yeah, there's been a lot written about the challenges posed by the corona shutdown and how some athletes really were able to get into race fitness and training alone. And other athletes, especially some older athletes, it seems like, you know, they really need the racing to get to that form. They can't just do it on training alone. Garrett Thomas last week had some quotes where he said, he kind of admitted, you know, I was kind of going through the motions in preparation. I need a bunch of racing at this age in my career to get that motivation level and to attain that fitness. I guess I always thought Bernal, he's only 23 years old. I would have put him in the bucket of guys who could get there on his own, but who knows, you know, I mean, he won the Tour de France last year. He's probably riding a high of enthusiasm. He's doing very specific training, but you know, replicating race efforts and training, I feel like the jury's still out on whether or not you can do that. And maybe it's just an individual thing, athlete by athlete. Some athletes can and some athletes can't.
Well, I believe in case of Egan Bernal, he's young, full of motivation. He feels the pressure to perform. He feels the pressure to train hard. And I think it went wrong there. He needed a coach to actually slow him down, right? I mean, a very simple old saying is, it is easy to train hard. It is very hard to train hard in the right way, right? Train hard is easy. You just go out and hurt yourself. Mostly it's good, but not if you want to win a tour. You need to train hard, but in the right circumstances, in the right dose, and you need to give your time to adapt and to absorb the workload and transform the workload into some sort of shape, power, and speed. And I believe they did a mistake there. The talent is there. That just doesn't go away. He, because he's young, or his team didn't manage to get him into the best possible shape with, you know, 10,000 miles of ocean in between them and the athlete. They were missing that personal contact, I believe, and the training didn't work out the way they wanted to.
So as we saw at Puy-Marie, this race has really separated into a two-man battle between Tadej Pogacar and Tadej Pogacar. If someone says you've been putting the emphasis on the wrong syllable, so Tadej Pogacar and Primoz Roglic. Whereas behind, you know, Richie Porte, Miguel Angel Lopez, Mikel Landa, Rigoberto Urán, they're kind of on the same level. You know, before we talk about the second tier guys, Jens, I mean, Tadej Pogacar looking so strong, winning the stage today, could he win the Tour de France, or is this 40-second deficit to Roglic on GC too big of a gap at this point?
Roglic is still young. He, as well, is only 23, just like Egan Bernal, or whatever, 22 and three quarters. He's almost 23, I believe. He's 22 and something. So he's a little bit into the unknown with the last time trial up the Planche de Belfie. In the moment, I would say, if it stays like this, Primoz Roglic is going to win because he's a better time trialer. But, and on the other side, if Tadej Pogacar really wants to win the Tour, he needs the bonus seconds with the stage wins. And if he could, he should have attacked at 500 meters to go or 1 kilometer to go to not only get the 10 bonus seconds, but maybe to get another 10 seconds to get closer. Because Pogacar must know, if he wins the stage, it is very likely that Primoz Roglic finishes second, and then he only gains 4 seconds because it's 10, 6, and 4 for the top three in the every stage. So chipping away 4 seconds a day, it takes forever. So he's running out of days, right? So he needs, if he can, he needs to have a more brave tactics. I was expecting him to go earlier today, but apparently Team Jumbo-Visma, they were set in such a high tempo, everybody was just there on pure survival. Nobody even dared to attack. Nobody even thought about it, right? They were all like absolutely on the limit, and, you know, they were just happy to be there and sit there and survive. So basically the strength of Team Jumbo-Visma just killed any attacks in the last 10 kilometers, except from Adam Yates. But we saw that also him, he didn't last, like he lasted a kilometer. It's just hard to race against a team so strong and dominant. Like basically they are the new Team Ineos. They are Team Jumbo-Visma. They are the new superpower, powerhouse of cycling. And it's hard to race against them. So I would say in a moment, it does look like Primoz Roglic, if he doesn't fall off the bike, he got it.
And meanwhile, Tadej Pogacar, I mean, he is missing his two domestiques for the mountains after Aru was no good. And, your man, the Italian champion name on the top of my tongue. Yeah, Formolo crashed out. So he is definitely missing some firepower for the mountains. What about the group of, I would say, second-tier GC favorites right now, all battling for this third spot on the podium? You have Rigoberto Urán, Miguel Angel Lopez, Adam Yates, Richie Porte, and Mikel Landa. If you were, you know, based off of what we saw today, to choose a favorite of who's going to get that final spot on the podium, who's your pick and why?
Well, my pick would be Richie Porte, former teammate, friend of mine. And he actually did look the strongest today. And apparently, since he has become a father for the second time, it's only, what, 4 or 5 days ago, it feels like there's a lot of pressure off him, like that stress. You know, he's at the tour. You know, you got a pregnant wife at home, you know, about to give birth, and you hope everything goes well. Now that pressure and stress is off his mind, his wife, the kid, they're all good. They probably soon going to be back home. So he feels, he looks more free and relaxed. And he said it himself. He wants one more performance for himself at the tour. And then he might go as the super domestique in whatever, maybe back to Ineos or in any other team. So he got a confidence. He feels free to go. It looks like he just found his rhythm now in the last few days. And he is, of all the names you mentioned, the best time trialer. So if he keeps going like this, then with the time trial on the second last day, he might really secure his third spot on the podium.
Yeah, and I mean, right now he's only about 40 seconds or so out of third place. I got to say, as a fan of the sport, I would love to see that. You know, I've interviewed Richie a number of times. He's obviously a very strong rider. He's had some bummer luck at the Tour de France over the years. And yeah, the storyline of him racing this year as his wife was having their second child was such a sort of personal story that it would be great for him to achieve that result. I feel like that would mark a real high point for his career. And he's had a great career. It's just had these moments where it's like lightning comes out of the sky and strikes him at the worst possible moment in the race. So I'm with you. I'd love to see that. Hey, yeah, it's, you know, during this Tour de France, one of the stories that I had been following even before yesterday was Team Sunweb and all the breakaways and the aggression and putting Mark Hirschi in the road and Thies Benoot attacking. And yesterday, stage 14 into Lyon, they light up the finale, and Soren Craig Anderson attacks with a couple kilometers remaining after everyone's tired and takes the stage win, their second stage win. I just think it's such a cool story because it's this team that in recent years has been so focused on jerseys, you know, yellow jersey with Tom Dumoulin, green jersey with Michael Matthews. Sometimes that all that focus and that dedication, you know, pays off for them. Other years, like last year, it didn't really pay off for them. So then this year, they just blow it up and say, we're going to go for breakaways and stage wins and try all this new stuff out. You know, I feel like that fails more often than it succeeds. What's your take on how this team has been able to come in with a completely new vision and actually execute and have success with it?
Well, I must say, there's about three teams in the peloton. They more or less constantly punch above their weight. Mitchelton Scott, Education First, already stage winner, and Team Sunweb. All of them, I believe, do not have the biggest budgets, but they do deliver spectacular racing, spectacular results, and one thing in common is that all these teams got an absolute fantastic team spirit. They're all like a band of brothers. They're not like a bunch of mercenaries. You just buy them and pay them and they work and function. No, they actually put their heart and soul into it. And it's really good to see that now, especially Team Sunweb, many or a lot of young kids actually really performing well at that team. And that they give everybody, they give a chance to everybody. They do the sprint for Case Bowl. Then Mark Hirschi goes out there. Then Søren Krag Andersen goes out there. And Kasper Pedersen still finishes fifth in the sprint on that stage, behind Søren Krag Andersen. So they had 5 riders in that group. They were the strongest team on that day, on the stage yesterday. Only team with five riders presented in the last group of survivors. They're doing an absolutely fantastic job. And yeah, they got some open tactics. This year, they know no GC contender for us. So we go for stages on the flats with a sprinter. And who knows what their plan is? Mark Hirschi is not far from the mountains jersey. I believe he's 4 points behind it. So just one more breakaway in the mountains, and he got the mountains jersey. So that's another chance where they could go. It's absolutely fantastic to see their team performing and the way they run it.
Have you ever been on a team where from 1 year to the next at the Tour de France, you had just a complete radical set of goals? And if so, like, what goes into that? What has to happen from a mentality standpoint to completely shift your focus at the Tour de France from 1 year to the next?
Well, it was at Team CSC. We had many years where we went for stages and we tried to be whatever, third to sixth with Ivan Basso or Carter Sastre. And then 1 year in December training camp, things like that, you cannot just do it like that. You need to prepare. You need to get your mindset ready. So December training camp, we go, okay, this year or next year, whatever, we're actually going to win the Tour de France with Carter Sastre. We're not going to go for stages. We're not going to go for any jerseys and any breakaways and no funny stuff. We're all going to work for one objective, that is Carter Sastre in yellow in Paris. And we're all going to be behind it. And we did shape a really good team around him. You know, I mean, of course, if you have riders like back then, O'Grady, the Schleck brothers, Bobby Julik, myself, what can go wrong? We got Cancellara. What can go wrong, right? And we all actually lived up to the challenge, and we all knew this is what we want. One of the things that also came out of these survival camps we did with Team CSC, you know, you really forged the team together, right? And that helped us. But yes, it took us 6-7 months from the first idea. No, we're not going to finish second or third or fifth. We actually want to win and nothing else. And also myself, I had to go, hey, Jensi, look, there will be no breakaways for you. There will be no spotlight, no breakaways. All you need is your big engine. All you need is me being reliable and being able to ride tempo and close gaps or drill it on the front to make the race as hard as possible. And it was fantastic. Everybody was so happy. We had a great team. And then the night at Paris, when we actually completed our challenge, we were like so happy. Everybody was so proud and happy on himself, because we all knew it's only Carlos in yellow on a podium. But all of us played an important role in it. Everybody had one or two special days where he was just better than he ever was, just to make it happen for Carlos. And it is a superb feeling of accomplishment, and you're so immensely proud of your teammates, of your friends, and on yourself after such a challenge. And that drives already for next year, the years to come. You know how it was. You know how good it felt when everything clicks and everything falls in line. And it's a fantastic feeling, and that's one of the feelings, one of the things I missed in the sport. The feeling of like being together with your brothers, being out there, doing all these adventures and failing together, winning together, you know, suffering together, laughing together. That's one of the things I really dearly miss in cycling.
Well, I mean, by that logic, I wouldn't then be surprised to see Sunweb, you know, having more success in the Tour de France with this core of guys. They've obviously come together. They've proven themselves to be able to work together around a common goal. So I don't know, maybe we'll see the team adjust its focus even in the future. I mean, Roman Bardet is coming on the team, I know. So I have my eyes on them. I've just really enjoyed watching them throughout this tour, because they're obviously a strong team. But, you know, when you hear some of these teams say, oh, we're going to go for stage wins, to me it's always like, we're maybe throwing in the towel a bit. But with them, it hasn't been that. It's been so focused and so much effort and thinking going to it. So chapeau to you, Team Sunweb, giving all of us hope that we can change our focus, maybe in life, at jobs, a relationship, whatever, and go in a new direction and have success.
Yes. Also, a change. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to go worse or bad. A change is a challenge, a change, it's an opportunity. It can be a lot better afterwards, right? A change doesn't always mean it's stress or negative. A change could be also very good and positive. And it puts a bit of pressure on you that makes you perform to the best you can ever be, that gets the best out of you. So yes, and now that you mentioned Romain Bardet, thank you for that. Romain is a super analytical mind. And I believe he's almost a little too narrow-minded when it comes to the tour. He counts the peas he's eating, right? He just does the kilometers, the efforts, minute at the second precisely. I think they're going to be just taking the blinds off, and I think he's going to see a whole new horizon. And hopefully, I wish, because he's a really nice guy, he's a really good character, I hope for him he's going to raise like a new person next year, new approach. He's not going to lose his focus, but just be, you know, he has been second or third in the tour. He knows how it works. His body is able to do it. And the new team, new environment, I believe it will do really good for him. I think next year he's ready for a comeback with the big names.
Well, you heard it here first, folks, from Jens. Jens is predicting big things for Romain Bardet in 2021. I would love to see that too. I love Romain Bardet. He, great rider, really intelligent guy, good quote. And so fingers crossed for Roman. Hey, thanks to Jens for being on the podcast. His segment, of course, is brought to us by Trek with the new Go By Bike campaign. Trek is challenging anyone to replace one car trip with a bike ride once a week. Post about it on social media with hashtag Go By Bike and get your friends to do it too. You can learn more at trekbikes.com/GoByBike. You heard me talk about MitoQ at the top of the show. Many of us have heard of supplementing our training with the antioxidant CoQ10 for energy and recovery. MitoQ is a unique form of CoQ10 engineered to get inside the mitochondria in our cells to help create cellular energy and neutralize free radicals. MitoQ helps improve recovery, immunity, digestion, sleep, and stress, all of which will help you train better and be healthier. To learn more about the unique formula, to read some independent clinical trials, and read some athlete testimonials, go to www.mitoq.com/powerupcycling. Again, www.mitoq.com/powerupcycling. Okay, back to the podcast.
I mean, in the beginning, when I hit, obviously the knee was the biggest worry in the beginning. But luckily, all the tendons were okay, and there was no real damage except road rash and a bit of swelling. That was the worry that could have like made me stop, but luckily it wasn't that bad.
Now, there's been a lot of crashes, so it seems in this tour, is it more nervous tour than other years, or is it always the tour is always the tour?
I don't think there's been that as many crashes as, I mean, obviously if you don't count the first day because that was just insanity, I don't think there's been like more crashes than usual. But yeah, I mean, when there's so much on the line, there's always going to be guys taking a little bit more risk, and guys are getting tired and crashing as well, and not as focused. And I mean, when you have so many guys so close to each other, there's just going to happen something, you know.
It's been a great tour for you. You almost won the stage. Is that something that you take confidence from, or is that something that you just have nightmares about, coming so close on such a great stage?
No, it was definitely not nightmares, because you can say I was close, but at the same time, I wasn't that close. Nance Peters was better on that day, and there was nothing I could have stopped him. No way I could have stopped him, so it's not like I could have done anything better and suddenly lose nights because, oh, I didn't do this, didn't do that. There was nothing like that. He was just better. I'm definitely looking forward to recovering from this, probably post next rest day, to again be in the thick of action.
And yesterday, bad news for the team with Bauke out. How does that affect morale or just the overall team plans?
Yeah, I mean, it really sucks because he was looking good for GC as well, and we had two guys up there. Luckily, Richie had a great day yesterday, and that kind of softened the blow. But yeah, I mean, it sucks. Bauke is a great guy. It's super nice to have him on the team. He's pretty relaxed, doesn't take much maintenance. He he's a really good guy to have on the team, and he will be sorely missed for sure.
Did you see that crash? What happened?
No, I actually didn't. We had just stopped for a little nature break, and we're coming back and just saw a bunch of people on the ground, and then realized the Bauke is there also.
Yeah. Now, obviously, Roglic is looking untouchable, and Pogacar. How do you see the GC play out? I mean, Bernal gave up time yesterday, kind of surprised.
Yeah, I think you're right. I see Pogacar on the podium in Paris. I actually think Miguel Angel Lopez is going to be on the podium in Paris.
Yeah.
I don't know if Roglic is going to be on the podium. Obviously, he looks amazing right now. And he's won Grand Tours before. So there's not no real reason to doubt him. But at the same time, you never know. And I would not place my bet my house on it.
Oh, really? Okay. Is it the pace of this tour for a second has been really high. Have you noticed that? Has it been... Maybe the way the course is designed.
It's always high.
Yeah.
It's always hard for me, so I just feel like it's always high, yeah.
The tour is always hard.
Yeah.
Is it any different this year from, you know, the fact that the tour is coming in September, it's the first Grand Tour after the break? Have you noticed any kind of weird things on the road this year?
I'm expecting people to really crack on the third week, just because we haven't had that much racing since the restart. But I still might be very wrong about this, and we'll find out.
Just a final question. I don't know if you heard the news. They're going to keep fans off the summit on Sunday at the Gran Colombia. Does that affect racing at all for you guys? I mean, you notice that in the race when there's no fans?
I think it'll surely affect a little bit. For one, like, whenever there's fans, there's kind of a tunnel, and you almost cannot attack sometimes because they're just so close to you. I don't think it'll affect it in a very negative way. Obviously, it's, especially for the Gruppetto, it's super fun to interact with the fans, sort of. But, yeah, it's going to be different. 2020 is a different year.
Hey, before we get to Andrew Hood and James Start, I want to talk to you guys about an exciting new wrinkle we have with our Active Pass membership. Look, we launched Active Pass about 2 months ago, and since then we've had a ton of signups, and I've gotten a lot of messages from readers, both positive, hey, I love this thing, and also saying, you know, Active Pass is cool, but there's elements of it that don't really apply to me. I'm not super interested in coaching or access to live events. What I really want is the content. I want VeloNews magazine. I want access to the daily exclusive content and all the stuff you're doing around the Tour de France. Well, guess what? We have a new membership that is catered to you if you are one of these people. It's called VeloNews Pass. It is $49 for an annual subscription, and it includes all of the exclusive content on VeloNews.com. So that's all of the membership roundtables, hoodies column, archive pieces, daily analysis, and exclusive news pieces. In addition to a year subscription to VeloNews magazine, that's 9 issues. And we're also throwing in the industry deals, like pro deals to Jordana, Scratch Labs, some other companies in there. And yeah, that's what's included in the new VeloNews Pass. It's $49. You can learn more or sign up at velonews.com/activepass. But this is a new membership product. I'm really excited about it. Again, you know, this was born from a lot of readers and your feedback. So continue to reach out via social media or web letters at velonews.com. And if you want more information on Active Pass or VeloNews Pass, check out velonews.com/activepass. Okay, let's hear from Andy Hood and James Start.
Here we are, James Start. How appropriate. We are in an Ibis. It's been, I don't know, it's actually been a pretty good tour for hotels, I have to say. But, you know, you get the occasional Ibis. It's not too bad.
Yeah, you know, at least, you know, with Ibis hotels, you know what you're going to get. You know, it ain't going to be great, but, you know, you can count on a few things. The breakfast spreads haven't been bad, you know. And you know, it's good for your collection of my European lifestyle.
My European lifestyle. Yeah, the Ibis. In fact, I took one for tonight. But you know, the Ibis is always open. You know, it's kind of like, you know, the Motel 6 of France. It's always open, late check-in, it's usually parking. There's always Wi-Fi. It's usually you can get 24-hour food if you're completely desperate. So, but only had one.
Anybody that's done the Tour de France knows it can get a lot worse than yeah. EVs. So we'll take what we can get.
Yeah, we haven't shared any rooms yet, and we have not slept in any hostels or barns or even in our car, which we've had to do a few times over the years. So, James, today you had quite the adventure. You were up on the Gran Colombia, which is in the...
It's in the Lain region, L'AIN.
But the name of the mountain range?
Well, it's not the Alps.
It's the Jura Mountains.
Is it the start of the Jura? Okay, good. I've done the Tour de Lain. I was a photographer for like 5 years, and we've done this climb many times. I love this climb. I think when I first moved to France, one of the very first stories I ever did was on the Madio brothers, Yvon and Marc Madio, you know, who were still racing bikes before they became the foundation of the Française des Jeux team. And I asked Yvon, I said, what's the hardest climb you know? And he said, it's the Grand Colombier. And he said, it's not a climb we go up very often because it's not, you know, in the Alps, the Pyrenees. But he said, for me, it's just brutal. And I've always loved coming up. It's a spectacular climb. It climbs out of this valley, and you just get this plunging perspective from certain hairpins looking down over it. It's gorgeous, and it's a narrow road. It's just a really beautiful, beautiful climb. And so I was excited when we had our first finish today on this. Smaller races have finished on it, but never the Tour. So to finish on it was something else, and you know, it was pretty brutal.
Yeah. So James, you drove up the course today, and tell us about what the scene was like. It was, you know, they have this red zone now. The COVID is kind of going off in some parts of France. You know, it's kind of surreal. Everyone's walking around with their face masks. Doesn't seem that bad, but it's probably the same everywhere. The Tour de France has decided to limit fans on the roads. You know, already they're already limited, no cars and campers. Now they're like basically saying nobody on the climb.
Right. We came out of Culoz, which is the town at the bottom, and we got about a kilometer up, and it was pretty thick crowds, and all of a sudden, stop. There was a couple of, you know, police cars, and no fans went past that. And I was driving up, and a couple of fans kind of knew the trails and back little pathways. And then you see them come out, but you would also see them getting like shut down by cops and sent back. I was about midway up because it's a series of really nice turns that are kind of exposed and just gorgeous. And there was like one, or I think I saw three fans with polka dot t-shirts on. I was like, how did you get here? And they're like, well, we walked on the back trails. I said, okay. And they managed to do it without, you know, crossing the road and getting caught. And there was one like Slovenian fan who apparently like...
doesn't read French.
Well, you know, but, you know, he was waiting for primos, and you know, apparently like they're neighbors, and he rides horses with in the neighborhood or something, whatever. But those are the only people I saw on the climb. It was kind
wow,
of,
that's interesting.
It was kind of crazy. But from a photographic perspective, that was kind of nice because it's a really spectacular, gorgeous climb, and just having the riders against nature in the roads is pretty special and pretty rare. So, you know, it's, I don't know if this is going to be a thing that lasts, but it is what it is this year, you know. And, you know, from a photographic point of view, I'd rather have the climb free of camping cars than full of camping cars.
Yeah, oh, for sure. And, you know, really unprecedented view of a Tour climb with nobody on it. I mean, we see it occasionally like at the Tour of Oman or something like that, where there's no people on a climb, but never at a Tour de France. So interesting times. Just on that same theme real quick, overnight we get going to have all these COVID tests lined up with teams. They reset this kind of counter because there were those four teams that had the one case of positives within their staff, and the rule is two strikes and you're out. But going into this next round of testing, they've reset this counter back to zero. So if, for example, tomorrow Ineos gets one more positive case, they won't be out of the Tour. But after what happened today at the Tour, maybe in fact they wouldn't mind going home, because Bernal just got slammed. I've never seen a defending, well, I have to think about that, but I mean, to see a defending Tour champion on such a team like Ineos Sky Legacy today was just an unprecedented collapse. I mean, I've never seen a rider that bad. And he was not making excuses. He was just saying that, you know, I'm not good right now, and there's other stronger riders than me, but he just got popped out the back.
Well, and he wasn't alone. I mean, you know, Nairo Quintana got popped about the same time, it seemed to me. Guillaume Martin had you know, a little mechanical, had just got back on, and then, you know, and then got popped. A lot of guys got popped. I mean, he's a good company, but he is the Tour champion. We thought he was going to be the next great thing. Ineos has been saying he's the next great thing, and he was looking like the next great thing, but he's not right now. Might he be the principal victim of the COVID restart? Perhaps he's the rider that has most suffered from this, who most miscalculated his Tour preparation. I don't know. I mean, he won the first stage he got. He came, you know, the first race he did coming back, he won.
For sure. Dramatic fashion.
Like, yeah, he looked perfectly on form. But, you know, he wasn't able to maintain or sustain. Is the back still hurting? Oh, I don't know. Or did that just turn out to be that wrench in the spokes for his preparation? Was he just building on the Dauphiné and then he had to drop out and miss some training? And is that what's missing? I don't know.
Well, that's the problem. We don't know because, you know, the media has been really kept at arm's length. And typically at a Tour, you know, we're going around the team buses, we're talking to the soigneurs, we're talking to mechanics, talking to the sport directors. And, you know, you can just, you know, you get in the juice through your contacts and, you know, and, you know, people will actually just tell you what's going on. It's not like it's a big secret. But this year, it's like we have no clue what's going on because we can't talk to Brailsford. We can occasionally talk to Gabriel Roche, who is the sport director. You know, but he's not the most expressive person. And, you know, they're not going to, you know, during the heat of the battle, they're not going to give away, you know, if one of their riders are a crook. They don't keep that under wraps until it's obvious.
You know, we can just make it up.
Well, we can do that as well.
Journalist credo was that William Randolph Hearst once said, you know, don't let the facts get in the way of a good story, huh? So we could come up with some great stories if we didn't have to adhere to facts. But, you know, we do try to do that. So.
We do try to have factual-based reporting on VeloNews.com. And we appreciate everyone who listens and reads. You know, today it was just, Jumbo-Visma was just so strong. I mean, you know, they had their whole train up there. You know, it's like long live the king, or the king is dead and long live the king. It's like that mantle is just passed. The crown has just passed from Bernal over to, well, Roglic still has to win. You know, we're not done yet. But that team has the foundation right now to, I think, really dominate Grand Tours for several years, I think.
Well, that's what we say. But then look who's in second. And the, you know, Pogacar is having.
He has no team.
This year. Okay. But let's take a look at the recruit. You know, he has the makings of making a team around him. You know, they came
in. But
it takes
several years to make a team.
Well, they have money. And they have, I don't think they're that far away from it. The problem was they weren't building a team around him coming into this Tour. They were building a team around really nobody. You know, a little bit of Aru here. And then, you know, Formolo would have been a tremendous help. He was on great form in the Dauphiné. He won a stage. He's a tremendous rider, but, you know, crashed and dropped out. They're hiring some good riders. Let's not forget, you know, all of a sudden a year ago it was all Bernal, and now it's all Ineos, Visma, Jumbo Visma. But you know, dynasties come and go, and we thought Bernal was the next greatest thing, and maybe Primoz is going to be a one-tour wonder. We don't know that. Sure, maybe next year it'll be Dumoulin. That could be. Or maybe it could be Pogacar. Let's also not forget that Pogacar, you know, Bernal won the Tour de l'Avenir, which is the under 23 Tour de France. Goes over many of the same climbs, many of the same roads. A year later, he's a pro. He's doing, you know, all kinds of work for Tomas and having a great tour. Next year, he wins. Pogacar won the Tour de l'Avenir the year after Bernal. So he's just like 1 or 2 years back. And he's already had, you know, he won 3 stages last year in the Vuelta. How many stages so far this year? 2 in the Tour, and he's in second place overall. Best young rider. You know, UAE has done a tremendous job recruiting in the last couple of years. And I think that they could build a team that rivals Jumbo very quickly.
No, I certainly agree with you with the talent of Pogacar. Now, someone told me today actually how to say his name. Pogacar. It's the accent on the second guy, Pogacar. Now, in fact, it was a video that Pogacar sent out to some TV people that was shared with me. That's how you actually say his name. It's not, you know, we butcher names on a constant basis here at Valenus, so. We're trying to get it right.
The one we don't butcher is Van Avermaet. Greg Van Avermaet.
Van Avermaet.
We can get that right.
Matt White might have something to say about that. But, you know, I certainly agree that Pogacar is having this amazing Tour de France. And I love the way the guy races. But when you look at the foundation that Jumbo-Visma has built over the last couple of years and just the quality of riders they have. I mean, you had Wout Van Aert today, like pulling all the way over basically those first two climbs and then halfway up the Grand Colombier. And yeah, I mean, and then, you know, behind him you have George Bennett, Sepp Kuss, our birthday boy. Birthday boy, happy birthday, Kuss, Sepp, if you're listening to this, turns 26 today. And then, like you just mentioned, Tom Dumoulin. And then you have Roglic, who's just like a killer. I mean, it's like murderer's row.
For the GC, this race is over. I could be really wrong. I mean, maybe Pogacar is really going to pull one out of his hat here on the TT or something. But I don't know.
He did beat your man there, Roglic, in the Slovenian National Time Trial Championships.
Yes, I know. And I thought about that. And I'm still thinking about that. But he's still got quite a bit of time to make up. He got back a couple seconds today, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, you know, with time bonuses.
Like 5 seconds.
Well, he would have gotten back. I'm the time bonus king. I should know this. Yeah, he got back 2 seconds.
2 seconds. Well, a Tour de France has been won and lost by 8 seconds, but two, we need a little more than two. We'll see where it goes. But I have a feeling he's going to have an awful hard time. I mean, unless he can like chip away in the next couple days in the Alps and then pop it on the TT, maybe. But I'd say right now, if I was a betting man, I would not bet against Roglic right now.
Just looking at Ineos, Sky, whatever you want to call them, you know, what's going to be going around their team bus tonight? I mean, you know, Dave Brailsford has done a great job at recruiting and rebuilding that team, you know, preparing for the future. You know, that process really started 2017. He started, you know, signing guys like Bernal and Sivakov, who's been, he crashed on the first day. He has been a non-factor in this tour, but he's actually very good. And all these young riders that he brought in, and brought in guys like Carapaz and Amador. But in fact, there's only two riders on this team that were even at Ineos before 2016. So, you know, Brailsford is like completely turned the page on that whole team. But man, do you think, you know, where is Froome and Geraint Thomas tonight watching this? You know, what are they thinking watching this tour right now? Because they were both flicked.
Well, I think it was Bjarne Riis that said maybe they're going to miss not bringing Thomas. You know, Thomas may have come into form this last week. You don't know. But those are the choices they made. And they made those choices before, and Brailsford's never been wrong. But, you know, I think at this point, what do they do? They've been beaten badly. And all you can do is now finish this tour. Nobody's going to be asking too many questions until this tour is over. Once the tour is over, close the books, then start looking at what, you know, once the dust has settled, what went wrong? Was it our preparation? Did we miscalculate the reboot of the season? Or are there some other things out there? Is Bernal maybe not as good as we thought? You know, last year, I think it was you that said, you know, really, if this team's tack, if it wasn't for Alaphilippe holding onto the jersey like one extra day, Thomas would have been the best placed rider and they would have maybe had to defend his chances. And he might have gone on to win two tours. So there's a lot of what ifs and, you know, what ifs and
what have yous, what have yous, lots of ins and outs.
They're going to be asking those questions. They're hard questions. And the first time ever that team has had to look at themselves like they are going to have to do after this tour and ask those kinds of questions. But, you know, bicycle racing, the Tour de France is all about dynasties. Theirs is, I believe, you know, I mean, you probably have to go back, say, to like the French national team or something in the 50s or the 30s or who knows, to find a team that won so many tours, whether at 8 and counting, correct?
7 with 4 different riders.
7, okay. Well, then they've essentially tied the great Gitane team because Cyril Guimard won 7 tours with 3 different riders. He had Lucien Van Imp, Bernard Hinault, and then Laurent Fignon, and he had 7 tours as well. So that was quite the dynasty, you know. And then you know, obviously the Armstrong dynasty. If you want, you can say what you want about it, but that was 7 years of our lives, and now this. So, you know, dynasties come and go. You can't win forever. That's sports. And if this one's over, well.
It's, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and then we got the New England Patriots. Yeah. And, you know, the Denver Broncos, they won a few there in between, so everybody's happy.
We'll see where it goes. I don't have favorites when it comes to bicycle racing. I have, you know, some people like a little bit more than others, but, you know, when it comes to the results and all, I'm, you know, let the best man win.
Well, yeah, that's usually how bicycle racing is, though, generally anyway. Typically the strongest rider wins.
Typically.
You know, especially in a stage race. You get some crazy things happen on the one-day races, but, you know, in a stage race, 3 weeks, it's almost always the strongest guy wins unless they have a lot of really bad luck.
Now, Andy, you have been, you've been throwing out the idea of a sort of national alliance.
That's not my idea.
Are the Colombians going to unite against the Slovenians?
Well, they lost two of their alliance today. So, you know, maybe that actually would help their alliance cause in the sense of, okay, now
we're going to work for Iran or somebody.
Well, now Nairo and Bernal are out of the GC picture. They both lost quite a bit. I mean, Bernal lost 7 minutes. So, you know, the scenario would be, okay, yeah, let's get Miguel Angel Lopez, you know, and Bernal attacking together. It's like, okay, you know, it's an alliance on the road of like, okay, you win the stage, I'm going to move up on GC, and all of Colombia goes absolutely insane.
Well, it kind of worked at the Dauphiné, you know, when Lopez and Danny Martinez went off. But I don't know. This is the Tour de France, and there's a half that alliance is suffering big time right now. I don't know if they're going to be good for much else. I think Bernal could well be going the way of Thibaut Pinot in this last week, which means not up but down.
Well, the Tour is just so cruel, isn't it? Just in general. I mean, every year, just people's dreams just get crushed. And a lot of times it just can be a crash, a flat tire at the wrong time, get caught out in crosswinds. You know, again, Thibaut Pinot, Bardet the other day had that bad crash, and there was some controversy around him with the concussion. But I was talking with a few riders the other day at the start in Clermont. Well, it was yesterday, in fact. And one name that kept popping up, I'm like, who's, you know, I was asking around who's going to be on the podium. And they're like, okay, Pogacar and Roglic are the strongest. But the name that kept popping up that the riders see who is strong is Lopez on Astana, which kind of surprised me because his previous efforts at the Giro and the Vuelta have, you know, he's still quite young. I think he's only 26, 27 now. But he's, you know, everyone kind of expected him to be like the next Nairo kind of thing. And he hasn't really come through, but I guess he's like looking pretty sharp in the bunch. Anyway, so lots of things to talk about, but we are going to wrap things up because
we have to prepare for our rest day.
We have
to take this rest days very seriously.
We do.
Chambéry is a nice town to spend it in. And then we'll be all refreshed, furry-eyed, and fluffy-tailed for the final week of racing.
Fluffy-tailed indeed. I like, that sounds. All right, thanks.
From Chambéry and our EBS Hotel, over and out.